This is Anchors, Freaks, and Dreams. I'm your host, Matt Perdue. Welcome back, guys. This is part two, a two-part on motivation. Keeping motivation to accomplish a goal. Because we said, look, it's not getting motivation. That's not the issue. We can get motivation like we get hungry. But keeping it is the issue. You know, just like sleep, it's cyclical. We're going to get motivated, we take action, and when we take action, our brain says, all right, I can lay off the gas. I don't need to keep you under chronic stress or anxiety so that you keep acting. That's not healthy. So you took action, now I can relax and get on to other matters. Well, the stopwatch starts, or that, you know, the hourglass, it just flipped and you've got a little bit of sand left. You've got a matter of days before that motivation really starts to wane. And then about 2 weeks, you're running about 20%. If you don't already get that flywheel going, then, you know, you probably won't last but 2 weeks. And this might surprise you, but the percentage of people that join the gym and do not come at all, or only come once a month, let's say, twice a month, after 2 weeks is extraordinarily high. I don't know what exactly the numbers are, but it's probably 20-30% of people. After the first 2 weeks, you know, they're two a month, they're bi-monthly. They're two a month, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say. So all we really care about is keeping the motivation to do the things we need to do. We talked about a secret sauce. You know, dip it in the secret sauce and you'll keep eating. You'll keep doing the stuff. The ingredients for the secret sauce of motivation: desire. Desire to accomplish the goal, or not just accomplish the goal, but to get the benefit from accomplishing the goal. Two, counting the cost. What is the price that you're going to have to pay? Time, energy, effort, money, discomfort. Know it. Belief. This is like a tripart belief. Belief that you can pay the price. You can do the stuff that needs to be done. Belief that the goal is achievable, that it is realistic. And three, belief that when you achieve the goal, what you want, that reward, you'll actually get. Like the person that bet me $1,000 that I couldn't climb 8 flights of steps, I still wasn't motivated to climb because I'm like, there's no way that guy's gonna give me $1,000. So I had no motivation. But when we had a lawyer and an escrow account and a signed agreement, notarized, then I was super motivated. I was like, I believe that I'll get this if I do this. And then four, enjoyment. And that could mean many things. I just like that word, enjoyment. It also means fulfillment. This is the action steps, the process, the things that you have to do. Is there something about those action steps that you can gain something from or get something from? Engagement, the flow, self-actualization. So now the question, this episode is about, is what's the recipe now that we know the ingredients? How do we put them together? How do we get them? All right. Two of them will be the exact same thing with, you know, a little extra for another part of it. One of them is going to be very similar. It's just a little bit of time and research. And then another one is going to be about you looking inside. All right. Number one, desire. How do you keep it? Studies show that our brains are kind of like a big oven. And whatever we put in there, it's going to bake a pie. And then this pie is going to be like a refined, glorified version of whatever you put in. So if you want an apple pie, don't put in mincemeat, man. You'll get a mincemeat pie. And I don't know if you've ever had mincemeat, but I don't know why it was ever a thing. Must be one of those leftover Depression-era foods like Jell-O. I mean, I don't even know. Do they make Jell-O anymore? I haven't seen it. It was so big when I was a kid. Like commercials, saw the commercials all the time. They had it on the menu at restaurants. If you had to get together, somebody would always bring some Jell-O mold with something floating in it. In everybody's cabinet, there was at least one box of Jell-O. Yeah, you don't want a Jell-O cake or pie. You want something good. You want a boysenberry pie or blackberry pie. Those are good. Anyway, my point here is that whatever you read about, think about, watch, listen to, whatever you put your attention to, that's the pie that's going to come out. And what that means is that if you have a desire for something, that's going to grow. If you have a repulsion for something, it's going to grow. If you have a fear of something, it's going to grow. So if I have a desire to win a contest, then I just read about that contest. Like, let's say it's a pie eating contest at the county fair. And I just read about all the people that have won it in the past and the times they did. Look, I want to get more and more excited about it. I'm going to watch some YouTube videos about people doing pie eating contests. And I'll just get wrapped up in it. It's kind of a dumb one. But if you want to be a professional athlete, then read biographies about the greats. What they went through, what their life was like. It's compelling, fun stuff. But if you have arachnophobia, maybe you shouldn't watch a documentary on the woolly tarantula. It's probably not going to help that out too much. Now, I know there's exposure theory, and they show that, you know, you can be down, patrolled in your panic if you expose yourself to whatever you're afraid of. But I mean, that it has to be done right. Otherwise, you'll just make the phobia worse. I mean, ask Indiana Jones, right? You think he felt better about snakes after the Well of Souls? Uh-uh. People that lose a lot of weight, like 50, 100 pounds plus, and keep it off, they're people that have got their nutrition dialed in. And they didn't do it because they're strict. That never works. Never works. In fact, the stricter you are, the more likely that you're going to capsize. It's people that have adopted some type, style, or pattern of eating, some diet that they identify with and they agree with it. Because you could eat 1,000 different ways and still lose weight. You could eat 1,000,000 different ways and still be healthy. The nutritional requirements of the body are not that great. I mean, if you're living in some destitute area with no food, then maybe that's not the right wording. But in the Western world, it's just not difficult at all. The issue is eating a bunch of crap that you shouldn't be. So what happens is people that are successful start to see food differently. And they start identifying with it so that they have a desire to eat healthy foods. It's like, here's a good one, vegetarians. People that become vegetarians do so for ideological reasons, not because Twinkies and Twizzlers are on the menu. They're like, oh, I'm going to stop eating meat and now I'm going to replace it with, you know, Junior Mints. No, the issue is the ideology of vegetarianism, that we shouldn't have to kill another animal and consume its flesh in order to meet our nutritional needs. And they just agree with that. And there's a human virtue undergirding that of compassion and love and equity that they probably are super, that's the way they live their life. That's what they find valuable. But people can do that with all kinds of things. Like, I know some people that they're like 35 years old and they're walking around with 6% body fat. And it's because they eat raw. And the ideology of raw is that, look, nature or God provided all the nutrients that we need ready to go. And that through the processing and refinement and cooking of these foods, we destroy the nutritional benefits. So don't do it. And they're like, yeah. And then they realize that when they're eating like this, that suddenly they feel better, they sleep better, they're more energetic. It's great. But it's not because it's the perfect nutrition. They just cut out all the junk in their life. But it's the ideology of this is the way God made it, or this is the way nature made it. We need to get back to that. We need to get that the pure essence of life. And so this virtue underneath it is like truth. They're identifying with this. And they have a desire to eat this way. And they research it and they study it and they agree with it. It's very much like a religious experience. That they're like, yes, yes. But it starts when you start reading about it, thinking about it, listening to stuff, reading audiobook or listening to an audiobook. So if you want your desire to grow, if you want it to stay white hot, then give it fuel. And the fuel is any material or content that has anything to do with what you desire. Because it's like that brush fire across the street last week. It burned out pretty quick. The grass burned and there was nothing else. There was no fuel. But if you had a ridge, side of a mountain of manzanita, and you got a fire start, oh my gosh, that thing would be like 2,500 degrees. It's going to rage. That's all there is to it. If you want to keep your desire, just invest some time into the study of what you want. 2, counting the costs. Look, just do some research, man. Whatever it is you want to achieve, what process are you going to have to go through? What is the price you're going to have to pay in time, energy, effort, money, discomfort? If you don't know it, you're not going to make it. Because it's not the pain or the price even. It's what your expectation is. It's the contrast. It's the difference. The research is pretty clear that poverty does not cause social instability. Not at all. It's like you have a trailer park and everybody's just equally poor. But you're living the dream, man. Like, you just roll your TV out onto the back deck with your little bug zapper and your hound dog, and you crack open an old Milwaukee and look, life couldn't get any better. But the moment the dude across the street comes in with a big gold chain, rims on his pickup truck, a new satellite on his top of his trailer, well, we got problems now. Who's he think he is? You understand what I'm saying? That's economic disparity is what causes social instability. People don't like to see it when somebody else is doing better than them. And then you got these people that they don't like to see it when anybody's doing better than anybody. You got problems. And that's the way, if you don't get control of it and you don't take that into consideration, it'll break you. This is a big deal. There's even a parable in the Bible about Jesus saying, this is the kingdom of God is like a landowner. It's harvest season, this guy, and he's got to get these crops out of his field, and he doesn't have enough laborers. So he goes out into the courtyard and tries to hire a bunch of people to help him. He says, 6 a.m., come out, I'll give you $100 to work the field for a day. And they're like, oh, sure, heck, $100. I'm jobless anyway. So they go out. He realizes it's not enough. He goes out, hires more at 9, more at noon. 3 p.m., he goes out and hires more. So it's like a 12-hour day. 6 p.m., they all line up to get their pay, and those that showed up at 3, he gives them $100. And all those dudes that got there at 6 are like, what? We're going to get like $400, man. They get up there, they get $100. They are incensed. They're completely indignant. Like, what the heck? Who are you? You jerk? We were out here bearing the heat of the day. We had to do the hard stuff. They came in and gleaned the end. And you gave them the same? It's not right. That's not fair. And the landowner's like, whoa, easy. Did I wrong you? We agreed, right? $100. And I've done that, you know? Why should you be angry at my generosity? That's human nature. I even watched this thing. Speaking of animal nature, I watched this thing where these little monkeys were in this cage, and these lab assistants were cutting up a cucumber and handing it to this monkey, and, you know, it was digging this cucumber. It was, he'd chew it up and stick his hand out and ask, you know, like, more, give. So he'd slice off another little piece of cucumber and put it in his hand, and he'd pull it inside the cage and eat it up. Well, there was another cage right beside it with another monkey, and he started giving this monkey grapes. So he'd slice a half slice of grape and give it to this monkey. And then the cucumber monkey starts to notice, wait, he just got a grape. And he screams, like real loud, like, you know, weird monkey scream. And sticks his hand out again, and he gives him a cucumber. And he, like, pauses and then looks back over and sees that monkey get his, you know, piece of grape. And he's just like, screams again and looks at the lab assistant like, what are you doing? He got a grape. And then he starts chewing on that cucumber. He sticks his hand out and he gives him a cucumber again. And then he's just had it. He takes that cucumber, he throws it on the ground and screams. It's like, no, I want my grape. Like, he was fine getting with that cucumber. But man, when that other monkey was getting the grape, he'd throw that thing on the ground. You got to count the costs, because if you don't know the price and it ends up being hard, you're going to give up. If you want to open a restaurant, anyway. I watched this documentary. There was this woman, she was a daughter of Korean immigrants, and she had a restaurant in New York, and it was like 6-7 tables, but she had a Michelin star, which is, she's the best of the best. She worked 14 and a half hours a day. She wasn't married, didn't have any kids, didn't have time for a relationship, didn't go home on the holidays to see her family. But she had a Michelin star. That's a heavy price. But to her, she had reached the pinnacle of her industry, and it was worth it. Do you know what you're going to need to pay in order to get the glory that you want? And if you don't, then you're going to quit. All right, desire. This is the one that's just like the other. I'm sorry. Belief, like I said, it's just like the other. Belief is the same thing as desire. Your belief in any aspect, whether you can achieve it or you can pay the price or it is achievable or that you'll get the glory. If you research it, you'll start to believe it. When I was in high school, I wrestled. And you know, the only reason I wrestled was because I didn't make the basketball team. But once I started wrestling, I was like, I like this better. But I was mediocre. Like, I was JV my freshman year. I was like 6-20 my sophomore year. The guy above me dropped down in my weight class, couldn't beat him. My season was over. But the summer between my sophomore and junior year, a friend of my mom who had wrestled in college gave my mom this VHS tape. It was a dual match between Iowa and Iowa State. And they're still, to this day, perennial powers in college wrestling. And I had never seen a college wrestling match in my life. 16 years old. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have cable. Nobody had the internet at the time. My dad never played sports. He didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to help me. And I watched this tape, and I was just amazed. These guys were like men, like not just men, but like superheroes, like jacked, you know, like ripped. And they were just doing all these stuff I'd never seen before. And I was just, and the crowd was like 30, 40,000 people, just raucous. And I just devoured this thing. I just watched it again and again. And something happened. I went from Sandlot to Yankee Stadium in my head. North Carolina 2A hillbilly high school wrestling to Division I All-American national champion wrestlers. Now, it didn't matter that I didn't think suddenly that I was as good as them just by watching this tape. I got it. Like, I understood who I was. But I went to a different ballpark in my head, in my headspace. And I then ordered these wrestling, Fundamentals of Wrestling tape series, like two tapes, and watched those again and again. And look, I had nobody, I had a sister who didn't like sports. I couldn't develop any skill. I couldn't even practice these things. I just watched them. But I went to wrestling camp with my team that summer, and I was like 10-1. My coach was like, "Who are you?" And my senior year, I was like 5th in the state. And I was, I was JV after 2 years. And it all started with this one tape. Belief. Exposure. Learn about it. Study it. Research it. Listen about it. Watch it. Read about it. And your belief will grow. You'll dial in. And the only other thing, this is a practical thing about belief, is tracking what you've done. Track your action steps. Track your results. What's your progress like? Take objective data about it. And some things, it's already built in. Like if you are in school, it's built in. Like you get grades. You get pop quizzes. You get exams. You go to the next course. You go from 1 year to the next. It's already in there. But if you don't have that stuff, you need to create it. Like, if you want to get in shape, my action steps are I'm working out 4 days a week. And then after 2 months, just look back and just where you tracked it. 6 of the 8 weeks, I did it. And you're like, I can pay the price. This is possible. Or if you're trying to lose weight, just weigh yourself. Just once a week. If you're trying to lose weight, then weigh yourself once a week. And it doesn't matter. Like, you may have gone to a party, you ate a salty meal, you're bloated, whatever. You stayed out late, and you're like, man, I'm going to weigh heavy. It doesn't matter. Some of the days, it'll be up, some of them will be down. But if you look at from beginning to end, it's a downward path. And you can look in the future and say, in 2 more months, I could be here. I can do this. This is achievable. You believe. And finally, the last thing about this is sometimes you just don't want to fall apart. So you want to set a goal in front of you that you can achieve that's within arm's reach. Just, 2 or 3, 4 months, maybe 6 weeks at the most out, that you're trying to get somewhere. You're trying to be able to accomplish something. You're not trying to win the gold medal. You're just trying to, get your time down to this so that then you can progress to another skill. You just don't want to fall off the wagon, right? And if you do, you want the wagon to be within arm's reach so you can grab it. You don't want to get left behind. Not in Nebraska. And nobody wants to get left behind in Nebraska. Make it manageable. My dad got all these magazines for his dental office. He would bring, whenever the new ones would come in, he would bring home the old ones. And, they would sit on some shelf behind the toilet. Like people did back in the day before phones. And one of them was Reader's Digest. And they were famous. They were huge, but I don't even know if they exist anymore. But they had stories, and they were known for having an 8th grade reading level. That was why they were popular. But whatever, that's why I would read them. But they would usually have some adventure short story in there. And one time, there was this true story about this guy whose plane had crashed in the Caribbean, and he was out floating in a life preserver between Cuba and Florida. He was out there for hours, and the sun was going down. He's like, I didn't get spotted. Well, at least the sun's not on my face. But then he notices dark objects circling him. And he's like, oh man, please be a dolphin. But it's not. It's a shark. and it's patrolling him. It's circling him. It smells him, right? No one can see him and hear him too. And it's getting closer and closer, and the sun's going down. And he can hear, it's so close he can hear it cutting through the water. And then it stops. He can't hear it anymore. He's like, oh man. And then boom, it hits him right in the back. It just bumps him. He's like, I'm a goner. Next thing he knows, he sees the dorsal fin right in front of him. This is like a movie, right? And it's coming right forward towards him. So he balls up in a little ball. And right when he gets up next to him, he kicks. And he kicks it right in the nose, and it leaves. And he's like, oh, maybe it left. It knows I'm dangerous. But about a half hour later, he starts to hear it. It's getting, you know, circling him again. It's getting closer. And so hour after hour, this thing's making runs at him, and he has to kick and punch at it. And but every time it's getting more aggressive and coming faster. And he's like, there's no way I'm going to survive all night. And he just stays vigilant. And then, you know, and then he starts to get drowsy. And he's been in the water for like 30 hours. And he's like, I'm a dead man. I need to stay awake. So he says, he looks at the moon. He says, I'm going to stay awake till here. It'll probably be about 5 a.m. So I'm going to focus on that. And then he does, and then he notices it's twilight and he's really drowsy. And he says, I don't think I'm going to make it, but I'm going to stay awake until the sun comes above the horizon. And then it does. And he's like, okay, I can give up at 7 a.m., but I'm going to keep my eyes open until 7, and I'm going to fight this shark off if it comes back. And he stays awake till 7, and he does it till 8, and he does it hour after hour after hour. He keeps resetting the time, and he finally gets rescued. But if he had said, I need to stay awake for 24 hours or I'm dead, he probably would have drifted off in that first hour. Make it manageable so you can stay focused and you just don't die. Life's going to throw you a curveball, I guarantee you, especially if you have a big goal and you're going to want to quit. And if you have it right in front of your grasp, then you can start back up on it and not just quit. All right. And finally, enjoyment. This is where you're just going to need to do some research on yourself. What type of hobbies do you like? What type of games? When you were a kid, did you like board games? If you did you like Monopoly or Chutes and Ladders? They're a big difference. Different type of focus, different type of enjoyment. Especially if you're 15, you're still playing Candyland. Like, there's a reason for that. And is the only time you like video games is when the family gets together at holidays and they pull out the Wii and you like play tennis or bowling? That's valuable information. Or do you just like World of Warcraft, where you in your room alone playing for hours? Those are two different experiences, and there's two different fulfillments that come from those. I did a whole podcast on gym types, and it was like, people that come consistently to the gym, they don't do it because they're trying to achieve a goal. They come year after year. They do it because there's something that happens when they come to the gym that they identify with, just like that diet. That they're like, yeah, I like that, enjoy that. They like the challenge. They like to push themselves. They like to click it off their checklist. And if they don't show up, they don't feel right. It's just like, you know, they had garlic ham and drank coffee, and then they went to bed and didn't brush their teeth. They're not going to be able to fall asleep. They just love that part of the routine. And they get a sense of fulfillment from checking it off their list, from doing it. There's social people that come because they meet the same people every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's part of their social life. These are all valuable things. So, I'm talking about the gym here, but look, if I were to go back into school, I wouldn't do undergrad, you know, I did that, but if I would say get a graduate degree, I would completely change everything. I was a terrible student. I would go to class, but I was a terrible studier. I was probably like in the bottom 5% of studiers. But the times that I actually did well were the times that I could focus and actually put some time into studying. And I would go back and I would do very confined time frames for me to study. And I wouldn't require myself to study past a certain hour or before a certain hour. But this is my window, and I'm not going to do anything else. You know, I leave my phone at home and I go to the library or something like that, so that I have no distraction. And the times that I made A's on exams were the times I was in a study group. Part of that helped me focus, because if I come to the study group, then I don't want to be the dolt that's there and hasn't done read the chapter and can't do anything. And they're like, "What do you think, Matt?" I'm like, yellow and blue make green. You know, I don't want to be that guy. Anyway, that's what you have to do. You find out what you can get fulfillment from. And if you dread it, find something different. If you find something that gets you, you can adjust your action steps so that you not only kind of look forward to it and you get fulfillment, then you're golden. You're totally golden. So guys, this is the absolute truth. If you get all four of these ingredients, it doesn't matter how long the goal takes or how big it is, you can and will achieve it. It's just all there is to it. Because everyone that has achieved stuff in the past is at some level used these ingredients. All right, guys, thanks for joining me. This has been Anchors, Freaks, and Dreams, and I will catch you on the next one.